It's just the way the world works, right? In terms of the how you're grown up, where you're from, your parents' ideologies, everything you're exposed to helps create this idea of what you see the world as. But in reality, let's say the best way that I see people changing how they view the world is when they get out there, they travel, and they see, you know, whether they're in Norway or Thailand or one of these countries where they just have this imagination of what it's like, and they go there and they have an amazing experience, maybe meeting some local people, getting this incredible hospitality that you can only find in certain parts of the world. And these things just totally change how your mind views the world, and it makes you so much more of a, like, an accepting person of people from all backgrounds, because you see the way they live and it builds so much respect.
In 1837, Horace Mann created the education system, a system at the time designed to pump out factory workers and professors, the same system that is still being used today in the 21st century. Now, Mann's system is backfiring. We are being molded by the same industrial system that has existed for close to 200 years. That system delivers us into a digital economy that has no need of our outdated skills. This isn't our teachers' fault. This isn't the government's fault. This is due to a rapidly changing world full of technology and unforeseen circumstances. And us Gen Zs are caught in the middle. Welcome to the Driven Young Podcast, the podcast for stressed, overwhelmed young Australians, teaching you practical life skills you can implement now to set yourself up in life. And now your host, Byron Dempsey.
Welcome back to the Driven Young Podcast, and today I am in Bali under the hot sun, joined by World Nomac. Matt Candy and I met in Bali because my friends and I were planning to surprise a good mate of mine, Luke DeMann. Matt was staying with Luke at the time, and we linked up with him and planned it all out. It went amazing, and I was lucky enough to spend the next few days with Mac. And I have to say, this guy is a legend. From America, Mac dropped out of corporate to pursue his dreams of traveling the world. He is now a full-time travel vlogger with over 800,000 followers across multiple platforms, and he travels the world making videos. In this episode, we learn about his story, how he managed to quit his job, how many years it took him creating content before he blew up, his advice to any future creators, and anyone looking to make content like him, and much, much more. As per usual, please DM me or Mac on Instagram. We would love to receive your messages. Please consider leaving a rating or review for the podcast. That would mean the world to me. And my new program, the Driven Young program, has just opened up. So if you're in Sydney and want to join, click the link in my bio. Everything you need is in the show notes below. One other thing I should say is the first 6 minutes of this episode, the audio is really quiet. And so if it's too quiet, just skip to around the 6 minute mark and you'll be good to go. If you can listen to it, then listen to that and then turn it down as it gets a bit louder around the 6 minute mark. Hopefully that makes sense. Now, over to Mac. Mac, welcome to the Driven Young Podcast.
Thank you very much, Byron. I'm really excited to be here.
Very excited. So we only met, what, yesterday or the day before?
Yeah, just the day before. And it was, like, of course, one of the craziest ways I've ever met someone before.
Yeah. So to give context, and I'll post this, I'll do a little edit. What I was thinking is, because you're going to edit your vlog as well.
Right.
I shot footage of when Luke surprised them. So I got a whole story, like, you know, 6 months ago, Luke surprised my friends, and now we surprised him back and everything.
Yeah.
But basically, to give it a context, we're in Bali right now, shooting underneath the hut in the sun, and three of my friends and I surprised Luke, a good friend of mine, and Mac, you were with Luke. We wore, like, ninja masks, balaclavas, jumped at him, he was terrified.
And it was, unbelievable, and it was, like, it was one of the craziest stories, like, a short synopsis was.
Yeah.
One of them, Nat, she had just tried to find somebody that was in Bali, and she happened to stumble upon my page, and so I was the first person she messaged, and I happened to be having a villa with Luke for the month, so it just worked out perfectly.
It was so good, meant to be. But look, I'm very excited for this episode, so we got lots to talk about. I'm sure you're traveling the world, you're doing cool stuff, you kind of left your job, whatnot. Before I get into that, I'd love to know, ask one question, and that is, what did you do after high school, and what was kind of going on in the decision making process for that?
Yeah, so when I was in the high school stages of my life, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, right? Like a lot of us at that stage in life, you know, we're going through many different life experiences. We're learning who our friends are, you know, what interests us. And so if I'm completely honest, I was a bit lost on where I wanted to go. And what I wanted to do is just get to the next step, get into college. And that's what I did right after I finished up in high school. Was I went and basically just joined a bunch of different type of general elective courses because I thought, let me try and figure out a process of elimination. I really do not know what I want to do with my life, let's say long term. But what I do know is that, like, the more things I try, then it'll at least slowly eliminate things that I don't want to do.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you were going for the reverse approach. Let's just try a whole bunch of stuff, and that way I know what I don't want to do.
Yeah.
It's actually a really good approach. And that's what a big advice I like to say to young people. It's like, just get out there and try stuff, because that way you're going to either, number one, figure out if you love it, or figure out if you don't love it. And either way is a win.
Totally, totally. And if you find something that you don't love, and maybe it's one of the worst experiences that you've had because you just did not like doing that task or that job or whatever it might be, the biggest thing you take away from it is just so many learnings of all of these different, you know, experiences you've had. And it grows you as a person in many different ways and helps develop you.
100%. Awesome. So you went into college, kind of like I talk about a lot on the podcast, a lot of people just jump into degree or, you know, choosing electives because they're not too sure they want to follow the path. All their friends are doing it. And how did you find that experience? Did you, because I know you joined like a frat and everything, you kind of had the, because very different experience to Australia, the whole American experience that we see in the movies. So what was it like for you?
Yeah, so my college experience was interesting because the first 2 years I actually went to one university, and there, like, I actually joined in and was a criminal justice major because I was thinking I wanted to be on the SWAT team, which in the United States, if you're familiar with SWAT, like, you know, tactical drug busts and those types of things. I was like, you know, that sounds like it's going to be epic. And, you know, probably a lot of the listeners are going to be quite shocked to hear what I'm doing now. And just, I share that because it just goes to show you, as you go through life, you learn more about yourself, and trying out these various things are what helps you figure out what you want. And so, you know, when I was in those first 2 years of my college experience, I was trying out many different things, and I ultimately figured out I want to get into something related to business. And when my turning point was when I transferred was because...
Okay, so the audio is about to change, so definitely turn it down, otherwise it's going to be quite loud.
Because my older brother, he's a big traveler, and that's kind of how I got my initial travel bug. And he had studied abroad in Barcelona, Spain, and I was like so interested because he was just traveling to all these countries, and he was still doing it on, of course, you have, you know, some extra expenses to get out to Spain, but still on a pretty budget-friendly way of living. And so I kept that in the back of my mind, and one day my brother is like, you know, you really got to study abroad. And so he convinced me to go and study in Sevilla, Spain. And when I was in Sevilla, Spain, like, it just, it exposed me to a new group of friends. And the thing is like, you know, throughout our lives, there's no doubt in my mind that the people that, you know, everyone's heard this quote, right? Like the 5 or 7 people you surround yourself with, that is the reflection of you. And of course, we all value all of our different friendships, but it's so important to diversify amongst various groups of friends because it'll bring out new energies and new characters and new ideas that are within you, you know, and it's just that exposure with other people and their way of thinking. And that was probably the most life-changing moment for me when I studied abroad in Spain, because I had this new friend group from all over. I was able to, you know, experience what it was like to travel and, you know, just break those perceptions of what the rest of the world is like. And so that's probably like my biggest turning point in college. And from there, that was like my obsession of travel.
Yeah,
again.
Awesome. It's kind of similar to my mom. Like, she did a year in Norway. And literally, she's 50 now. She still visits them. She's doing a walk with one of them, you know, 30 years later, and their daughters are now friends, my sister.
Wow.
All because of one trip she did when she was like 18 or 19. And so, like, again, similar to you, changed her whole life. And I think it's so important because, especially in like the countries that we're in, very Western countries, we're very, especially Australia, we're very bubbled because we're so far away from everything.
Right.
And so we don't see too much cultures. Like, I know a lot of people have never really left or experienced other cultures. And because for me, I went to Thailand when I was like 11, and that was a big shift for me. I went, oh my God, we have it so good, because I saw a lot of poverty there and it was so extreme and unbelievable. And so that was a big thing for me. But I do really want to get in on travel, because I haven't done too many episodes just on travel.
Right.
So you're a full-time traveler now, correct?
Correct, yes. Yep, I've been a full-time traveler now for almost 3 years, August 2019.
And what does that involve? You create content and travel?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, just to give a little bit of the backstory, I had a bit of interest in videography growing up, but I didn't see traditional videography as what I wanted to do. And, you know, this whole idea of content creation and travel vloggers, you know, it seemed a bit like a fantasy for me, if I'm completely honest with you. But I thought about it, you know, and in the U.S. system, you know, we have student loans. I think it's similar to a certain extent in Australia.
Yeah.
And so I had to go into the corporate world and, you know, pay that down, save up some money to travel. But like, I went on this trip to Japan, Thailand, and Hong Kong back in 2017. And I brought my camera with, and I just realized how much I loved making videos and sharing what the world was like. I would get replies just from my close friends like, I never knew Hong Kong was like this, or wow, Tokyo is insane. You know, like just all of these reactions. And it made me realize there are so many, it's just the way the world works, right? In terms of the, how you're grown up, where you're from, your parents' ideologies, everything you're exposed to helps create this idea of what you see the world as. But in reality, the only way that I, or let's say the best way that I see people changing how they view the world is when they get out there, they travel, and they see, you know, whether they're in Norway or Thailand or one of these countries where they just have this imagination of what it's like, and they go there and they have an amazing experience, maybe meeting some local people, you know, getting this incredible hospitality that you can only find in certain parts of the world. And these things just totally change how your mind views the world, and it makes you so much more of a, like an accepting person of people from all backgrounds, because you see the way they live and it builds so much respect. And when I went on this trip for these couple weeks back in 2017, that was that moment that just clicked for me. And I was like, I need to figure out how to turn this passion into some sort of monetizable business.
Yeah, awesome. And so, I mean, you spoke before like how your brother wasn't spending that much more money when he was traveling. And you're like, wait, how's this working? Because whenever I post content on TikTok specifically about travel, and you know, the biggest victim mentality, everyone always goes, oh, but it's easy for you to say it costs money to travel and everything. And that's true. But I do think there is a misconception. Like, you could travel, like, it's doable. I think definitely doable for most people listening to this podcast. Like, you can just, you know, save up, go to England and get a job working over there, and then go from England to Europe and then get jobs. Yeah. And, you know, you're not going to be living a luxurious life, but that's a fun part.
Right.
Like, going to the hostels, that's where you meet the people, like, exactly. When you're not doing the luxurious stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so true, because the thing is a lot of people, I think, are pushed away from travel because of the one big expense that throws them off. And that is the flight ticket. And especially, you know, with a lot of listeners, I'm sure from Australia here, they're thinking, you know, wow, I have to go to the other side of the world pretty much to travel anywhere. But if you're looking at just the flight cost, it's a bit overwhelming, right? But you save up for that flight cost, and then you realize you're going to some of these European countries where you might be paying, you know, 20-30% of what the cost is for maybe a meal at a nice Western restaurant in Sydney, Australia. And so your actual day-to-day cost of living, your hostels, as Byron just mentioned here, you know, that's you can pay $8 to $10 a night, or even less, depending, you know, how many bunks you want in one room. And there's so many ways to travel, and it's so much more affordable than I think a lot of people believe. And when you really kind of start looking into those costs, that's when it becomes real.
Yeah, and I think it just means if you can't afford to travel, like, you've just got to, you know, save up, get the flight. If you can get the flight, that's a big thing. But then it's like, you're not going to be able to, you know, you still got to work. People look at your life and think, oh, it's awesome. You just, you know, all you do is travel. It's like, yeah, but then you've got to edit and you've got to create the content. And creating content, you know, is a lot of work. Like, it's exhausting. It can look really fun on YouTube and people are like, oh, that's easy, you get to travel and have a fun life. And that's true, but there's still a lot of work involved. And I think people have to recognize that no matter what, you're going to have to be working while you're traveling, or you got to save up and just, you know, go on a big holiday.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That's an important point, because there's the two ways to approach it. You know, it's one, save up, go on a bit of a holiday. But if you want to make it more of a long-term thing, you need to figure out how you can make those revenue streams happen, you know. And there's a lot of programs. There's many, many people, you know, with the same ideas you know, some of the listeners might have here, which are, how can I travel the world and make this possible? And so you can find those programs where you can go and work and travel, and you kind of get you're making that money while you're also meeting people, having that experience. And, you know, if you want to take it to the next level, how can you build your own business? And exactly as Byron's saying here, you know, creating content, I don't want to say it's a fair amount of work. It's a lot of work and it's a lot of dedication. And I think every content creator that has started to see success will say the exact same thing, that there was a long time when I would post a YouTube video or an Instagram post or a TikTok and it would get 10, 20 views. And, you know, it was your grandma, your sister, and your brother. And those were three of your 10 views. And it takes time, though, you know, like with everything in life, you need to practice, you need to get better, you need to show your personality, the real you on camera. And that's when you're going to have the strongest connections and you can actually build that monetizable business.
Amazing. So, I mean, let's go on that, like, content creation, because I think that's a big thing that a lot of young people want to kind of be pursuing or think about being pursuing. And it's kind of like, you know, traveling the world has got to be, because creating content has got to be one up there for the highest, like, jobs that people want to do. And so how did you get into it? You mentioned you're into videography. You started just filming some stuff. Did you start posting it just grew immediately, or were you putting in a lot of work? And did you slowly transfer from a part-time job into full-time? What was the process like for you?
Yeah, so I had made a couple videos when I studied abroad in 2012, but my dad had given me, like, a small little digital camera. I brought that away. Then I basically made a couple of video montages and I put it up on my YouTube channel. But at that time, I didn't really have any intentions to become a YouTuber. I just wanted to, you know, archive my trip in a way that I could look back and see more than just a couple photos of my experiences. And then I graduated from the university in 2014. I had, you know, I'll be completely transparent here, I had $65,000 in debt. And so my hands were tied and I knew I wanted to travel the world. Wasn't focused on, once again, the YouTuber career yet, but I said, okay, you know, step one is I'm going to go into the corporate world. I'm going to get some experience because whatever I do in life, I'm sure there's going to be some, you know, good experiences that I can take from, you know, a couple of years in the corporate world. Save up some money so I have that comfort to do what I want, to do what I'm passionate for. And then, yeah, after I went on that trip in 2017, just a few years into working in the corporate world, I figured out, okay, I know what I want to do. I want to give this YouTube channel, this YouTube passion that I have, a shot. But how can I reach that point? And so I basically put together a bit of a financial plan for my life and said, all right, let's count backwards from how much I'm making each month. How much can I put towards my student loans? Have a little bit in my retirement account and then have some spending money to basically be my own investor in my business. And so how I looked at it is I said, for the first 2 years of traveling, I want to be able to not depend on making any money. And I just want to mention this while we're right in the middle. There are many different ways to go about approaching this. I was in probably the state where I wanted to go with a very safe option in my mind. And, you know, it all depends on the person's risk tolerance. I know many travel vloggers that will, you know, take $3,000 and they will, you know, be able to start their career and go travel Southeast Asia and they'll be able to do it. But for me, I took a safer approach to it and saved up that money in the corporate world, found that date of August 2019 when I felt comfortable to leave my job, had the financial means to, you know, try out the content creation business. And so that kind of leads me into when did I start exactly? About 1 year before I actually left the corporate world, I started to do some week-long trips. So let's say I do a trip to Europe and I would maybe film quite a few videos while I'm on that trip. And then I would have enough content to get me through, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks until I could go on another trip. So yeah, I could at least get my feet wet on the YouTube channel before I like took the full plunge and, you know, just left my life behind and moved on. And so then, yeah, I left the corporate world and it was a surreal moment. You know, it was almost 5 full years in the corporate world. Like this fantasy I had of, you know, quitting my job to go and chase something that I wanted was real. Mm-hmm. And now it was sink or swim, to be honest with you. And I think the reality is there's a lot of misconceptions with building a brand. And many people, and I'm sure I had many of those moments, you know, think that you just go full time and you do it and you make it happen. But that wasn't how it worked for me. You know, the first 4 months, 5 months, I was going really fast-paced travel. I was trying to make as many YouTube videos as possible while editing them. And I didn't grow much. I think I left the corporate world with 3,000 subscribers. And in my first 5 months, I maybe got up to 5,000 subscribers. And I had made $300 in the first 4 months just on YouTube ad revenue. And I remember looking at that like December 31st, like, wow, all right, well, this is why I had to save up a little bit of money. yeah, exactly. This is why I saved up a little bit of money so I didn't have to depend on it. And
what year was this, by the way? Sorry.
This was December 2019.
Okay.
So relatively recently.
Yeah, yeah.
And going into, actually, I was in Australia December 2019, ironically, and then went to New Zealand, and then the pandemic hit. And to be quite honest with you, the next few months of my life were some of the hardest months of my life. And I'll explain why. And it's a very important part of the journey because no matter who you are, no matter what your background is, you're going to go through a significant amount of speed bumps in your life where you literally feel like your life has been turned upside down. And this was the moment that I hit. I had a 5-year relationship that we started traveling together and we broke up. The pandemic hit. I had now just moved home. And in the US, you move out of your house at a pretty young age. So I hadn't lived at home for a decade, didn't have a job, wasn't really making any money. And so I had all these highs of being in the corporate world, traveling the world. And now, boom, I'm back at home, back in Wisconsin in the United States, and wasn't really making any money with my career. And it was a really tough time for me. I honestly, like for 1 month, I'd wake up every morning and be like, did I make the right decision? Did I not? But the reality is with anything you want in life, you got to get through those moments of pain. You got to get through those moments of where do I pivot to next and take it all as a learning experience. And so TikTok was just starting to come about, right? Like during the pandemic, everyone that said they would never download a TikTok downloaded TikTok. And so I was one of those guys too. And so I was like, all right, you know, I'm going to do this. And I started making some TikTok videos of my travel. And over the next couple of months, I finally had a platform that was getting some proper traction. I remember I got a video that was like how to travel the world on $30 a day for, I made a video about how to travel Southeast Asia for 3 months on a $3,000 budget. And I got like 30,000 views on that TikTok video. And I was like, wow, that is exactly what I needed to have the motivation to really just have the energy to like go full speed ahead again in the content creation world.
Well, I posted a TikTok of this story actually. I shared it at Empower You as well. It's an insane story, which kind of links to what you're just saying. Mm-hmm. It had an experiment with rats. And he put a rat into like a thing of water, and the rat had to tread water to survive. And he wanted to see how long the rat would tread water until it gave up and started to drown. Yeah. And so on average, the rats would tread water for about 15 minutes. And then the scientists would pull the rats out as they were drowning and save them. And then he went, all right, I've done this for a bunch of rats. I wonder how long they'll survive for the second time. So he puts them back into the water. And on average, the rats didn't survive for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. They survived for 60 hours. 60 hours, and the entire experiment was built around hope. And they're saying because the rats had experienced being pulled out by the scientists the first time, they kept going, if I just hold on, he'll finally pull me out. And it's kind of like you with the video. You got that 30,000 views. It's not life-changing, but it's enough to give you that little bit of hope, which keeps pushing you forward. And then you get another one, and another one, and another one. And then a year later, you're doing all this cool stuff and whatnot. And I think that's a really important lesson for young people. Like, don't have to focus on getting a million subscribers. Just focus on the first little bit, because that's going to give you enough hope to keep going.
Absolutely. That is an incredible story. And honestly, it hits the nail on the head perfectly, because it is, you know, with many trial and error moments, you don't realize how much further you can push yourself, because, you know, you might be in that moment where you're fighting in your mind if it was the right or the wrong decision. But exactly as you said, you know, that moment of hope, that experience that just gives you that energy, and you just never know when it's going to happen. Mm. You know, like I said, I was in a pretty low point, and so I wasn't sure if I was going to pivot back to the corporate world or not. And that video really pushed me through. And then over the next, 5-6 months, I pushed my TikTok out, and I got it from, you know, zero followers to 50,000 by the end of 2020. Mm. And so that was that energy. And then that fueled me to work on all of my other platforms.
Right. It's the exact same story as me. It's the same story as Pace, as like so many creators we know. Like, we all got to start during the pandemic, because it's kind of like, same with me. I lost my job. Well, I was running a business, and I lost like all of my clients except for one. I had to move out of my office. I was in my mum's office, because none of her team was in, because she was during COVID. It's just me, my mum, my dad in this big office space. And I didn't even know what I was doing. Like, I got the government benefits from Australia, so I was getting some money in. And I was like, well, I'll start posting on TikTok. Before that, I was posting everything on Instagram. I was literally getting 2-3 views.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. And I was like, that's okay. I'm doing it because I know the long-term play. But when you're getting 2-3 views, it's like, I could keep doing this for years and nothing's going to happen. And right. So when I got on TikTok, I posted like my 10th or 15th video or something. It hit 18,000 views overnight. No. And then I went to bed and I woke up and it was on 2.5 mil.
Wow.
And I gained 30,000 followers in one night.
That must have been the most like euphoric moment of your life. You just wake up and you're like, did this really happen? Is this real?
Yeah, literally. I was like, I literally had like 29,000 followers when I woke up. My phone, because I hadn't turned notifications off yet. And it was such a good video. It's still one of my biggest videos today. I've reposted it a few times. It's got like 30 million views, that whole series. Because I posted it and it ended up getting like 6 or 7 mil. And then because it was part one of a series, I posted part two in the comments, part three. I went all the way to part 11.
Yeah.
It just went crazy. And that was like, it gave me the hope and the spark to like, all right, let's double down on this. Let's keep doing that. Because during the pandemic, I was doing like one interview a month. I had no inspiration. I was on Zoom.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to do. I was similar to you.
Yeah. I think a lot of us experienced that, you know, like not everyone was, get a chicken thigh.
Fuck it out.
What's good, bro?
Great interruption. Sorry, yeah. What were you saying?
Where were we on that?
I don't know. I said, a lot of people in the pandemic.
And so I think, you know, many of us would probably all agree that, like, we all experienced a lot of challenges in the pandemic, like all of this extra time in our hands. And I think that a lot of people were able to walk away from the pandemic and say, while it was a really tough period of my life, I was isolated from all the things that I used to love. It also pushed people to try out new hobbies, new interests, spend more time with their families or their significant others, whoever it might be. And there's, you know, looking back at it, trying to, you know, pick out the silver lining, I think there was a lot of great things that people can say they've gotten out of just having this period of isolation.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, I created a bunch of stuff. Like, so there was a period you probably saw on the news, like Australia. We were like 6 months behind all the other countries.
Yeah.
In like lockdowns. And that's a whole story in itself. But there's a period where it's like Sydney did 125 days straight and it sucked. But I got so much done. Like, right. I got so much. I created this whole new program. I was really productive. And from in that time period, I got a lot done for my business. But I got a lot done for my business, but I didn't enjoy it. But again, as you say, like, there's a lot taking. And so many creators I know, like, got their start in the pandemic because it's like they had nothing else to do. So, like, well, I might as well start creating content. And that kind of set them up.
Exactly. In a way. Yeah, yeah. And it's pretty crazy when you think about it because, you know, TikTok was nothing. I don't want to say it was nothing, but, you know, a very small population in terms of, like, what's on it now are, like, we're using it then. And it, and just this huge thing that changed the world turned all of these people who, a lot of them I'm sure didn't even have any intentions to ever become like a TikTok creator.
Yeah,
and they had a couple viral videos and were like, whoa. And now they're running these like massive businesses out of it. And so it just goes to show for anyone listening that, you know, we can probably all name some of the craziest like TikTok accounts we follow that have like millions of followers. Like the one that I always use as an example is this guy or this person puts a cone on a skateboard and he like drops it down like half pipe.
Yeah, I see that.
And like, you know, like so many people follow this account and it just goes to show people, you know, not everyone needs to be comfortable in front of the camera. I don't know if this person shows their face ever, but from what I've seen, it's just a skateboard going down the ramp and he's built this brand. And I'm sure, you know, just assuming at this point, he's probably doing a lot of brand deals with, you know, skateboard companies and all these things. And he's built this business off just having some fun in his life.
There's a guy in Australia who spins things on his fingers. That's all he does. And he'll get like the biggest things, like a chair. He's like, you wouldn't. And all he does is respond to comments. They say, you wouldn't spin a chair on your finger. And he just spins it.
Wow.
And he's got over a million followers, I think. I think he's in Perth. I haven't seen him in a while, but like that was him. He's just spinning stuff on his finger. You know Gary Vee, his book, what's it? Crushing It? The yellow one?
I've heard of it. I have not read it though.
The book's basically he interviewed a bunch of creators and he just took their stories and he found the most crazy stories about how they're creating a living doing the most random stuff. Like he always pushes a message. You're better off to be, you know, doing $75,000 a year selling Smurfs or whatever, or doing whatever random shit that you enjoy rather than on 150 or 200K a year doing something you don't enjoy.
Totally. And honestly, I can tell you this from my experience that in the corporate world, I was making a lot of money and I'm sharing this just as the example because probably an important point that I should have shared when I was in high school, you know, like we all dream of making a lot of money. I was from a, you know, I'm from like a middle-class family. And so, you know, I had this idea where I wanted to make, you know, a lot of money and what career is going to get me there the fastest, right? And so when I went into the corporate world, I had worked really, really hard. I was the first one in it and the last one to leave the office. And, you know, it was great experience. I was able to move up in the company and I was making a lot of money when I left. And what I will tell you though is that if you're making a lot of money doing something that you don't necessarily love, it's not going to solve your problems. Mm. It's not going to give you that happiness you're looking for. And I will tell you that when I first started making a little bit of money on content creation, while it was nothing compared to what I was making through, you know, in the corporate world and my prestigious, you know, pretty prestigious role that I had, that money I valued so much more because I was doing something that I loved. I was motivated. I would wake up super early in the morning, not because the alarm went off and I had to get up for the grind. It was because I just loved it. I couldn't wait to get up. I couldn't sleep because I couldn't wait to work on the next project. And the reality is when it comes to passion, you'll be able to work so much and you'll never even feel like you worked a day in your life because it's just something you love. And you'll be so much better at it if you really pursue it.
That's why I say, like, you can't compete with someone who's passionate if you're not. Like, if you're just doing it for the money and for the external validation reasons, you can't compete with someone who's passionate because they wake up without the alarm.
Exactly.
And the example in my book I wrote was like, if you had two doctors, it's like one, they're both qualified, they're both going to do a good job on you. But would you rather have a doctor who's there for the paycheck or one who's passionate and loves what they're doing?
Absolutely. You know that that doctor is going to be the one that really double checks, you know, if it's a surgery that you need to have done, they're going to make sure it is done perfectly because it is their number one goal to, you know, be... It is.
In the background, adding quotes. Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of people, and this is important, need to focus on, you know, am I doing it for the right reasons?
Yeah.
And I do know a lot of people who have joined the content creation world for the wrong reasons. And I think it's
very... They just want followers or, like, you know, recognition and...
Yeah, they want the clout. They want the recognition. They want everything that kind of comes with, you know, building a social brand. But then when they realize, wow, this is actually a serious grind. I mean, it's a full-time job.
And you don't make any money for the first, like, year or two. I'm still not making that much money. For, like, 5 years, I've just been making enough money to get me by.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm fine with that. But it's, like, I think when you've got followers, there's a perception that you're doing well financially.
Right.
Like, oh, he's got lots of followers. You know, he must be doing well. It's, like, nah. Like, especially on TikTok, like, you make piss all on TikTok.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Like, it's, you know, I know people that have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of followers and maybe are just doing their first brand deal on TikTok, so they haven't even really been able to monetize it yet. And that's just what sets the difference. You know, if you're doing it because you love it, then the money's going to come. You know, if you're always focused from day one on, you know, how do I turn this into a profitable business? You might not be doing it for the right reasons rather than I want to make this content, you know, to provide entertainment, to provide insights on changing the world, to, you know, provide educational content, whatever it might be. Step one is have the passion and find what that is that makes you tick, right? And share that with the world. And the revenue streams, eventually, of course, you need to turn it into a business when you, you know, if it's going to be your number one reliant source for income. But having the passion first will fuel you to get to that step of monetization.
100%. And that's the whole thing. If you're passionate and you actually enjoy what you're doing, when COVID hits or when you have the tough times, that's how you can keep going. Like, imagine if you weren't passionate and then COVID hit and you're in that 1 month period. Like, you probably wouldn't have pushed through because it was just the job. Because you're passionate and you love doing it, that enabled you to push through. There's a concept we talk about called the audience of none, which is, what would you do with an audience of zero people? If you were on stage, would you dance just because you love dancing? Would you be a doctor if you couldn't, no one could call you a doctor and you didn't get $250,000 a year? You know, you just did it because you love doing it. And so I think for me, like, podcasting is the best example, because when you start a podcast, you have no listeners.
Right.
And you probably won't have listeners for a long time. Not many people can even build any listeners at all. It's really tough.
Right.
I still feel like I don't have that many listeners, and I've been in it for 2 years. But then the benefits for me, like, I mean, everyone in this room right now, I met through the podcast. Like, all my best friends, I met vicariously through the podcast, whether I, you know, I met this person and they introduced me to someone. But if I hadn't started the podcast, I wouldn't have any of the friends, my closest friends in life. And so there's so many benefits outside of the followers and the listens, as I'm sure it is with you and your travel content.
Absolutely. You know, just the people you meet throughout the journey, they change your life in so many ways. There's so many, like, other intrinsic benefits outside of just, you know, exactly as you said, followers, or, you know, turning into a profitable thing. There's just, you never know how following your passion is just going to change your life in so many different ways, and who you'll meet in the journey that's going to bring you to your next step. And, you know, it's a very beautiful thing when you look back on the story. And I think we can all say this, that even when you're building the brand from the very beginning, there's no better feeling than when you get that first message from someone and they tell you how, wow, you know, you told me the message I needed to hear at this point in my life when I was in a really rough state. You know, you helped me through something. And you don't even know what these people look like. You never will even meet them, but you somehow had an impact, and just a small little moment like that can be enough to just fuel you to the next focus point.
I just crossed my 500th message last week for that.
Nice. That's amazing.
At
congrats.
The beginning of every episode I say DM me. I say it every episode. I'm like, make sure you DM me and my guests. I always encourage people to DM my guests.
Yeah.
And it always bothers me because I get thousands of people listening to every episode, and, like, I'll get one or two, maybe. Sometimes I get none, which, that's fine. But it's just, like, it's crazy how much one message can impact me and my guests as well.
Right.
Like, I had a nurse on, and he's such a cool guy. He's just a nurse, and he's not a content creator. He has his own podcast, a medical podcast. And this one girl, exactly as you said, like, 2 days ago, reached out to me and said, "Hey, Byron, I'm just about to go for my take the final exam to be a nurse, and I've been questioning whether I want to do it, and your podcast came at the right time and made me realize it's exactly what I want to do." And it's like, when the going gets tough, I always look at those messages because I screenshot them all and keep them in a folder.
Yeah.
And the other day, I got a 14-year-old girl from Sweden message me, and it's like, it's just crazy that, you know, I always say I just focus on those, whether the money comes or whether anything else comes, because that's the true thing.
Absolutely.
That's the main impact you're focusing on.
Yeah, yeah. The main impact is, you know, how you can help people's lives and provide them some level of, you know, comfort or motivation or inspiration or whatever it might be. And so I think that's, you know, such a great way, you know, for anyone listening that's thinking about getting into some sort of content creation, you know, saving some of those messages, even if it's at first just a friend or a family member that, you know, saw a piece of your content and was really moved by it. Because it's such a good way when the going gets tough is to take a look back and be like, wow, you know, there's a lot of people there. Let's put it this way. There's only a very, as you just mentioned, Byron, there's a very small percentage who are actually sending you a message of how you help them. There's many people out there that will never message you in their life, but probably, you know, listen to your content exactly, religiously. Yeah. And, you know, it really helps them get through many phases and steps of their life.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why I kind of, I say, cause like, I know a lot of people say that, and I say it as well with this podcast I follow on TikTok, and they'll be like, oh, I love that guy's podcast or something, and I've never actually listened to it, just through TikTok.
Yeah.
And you can't see track those. And it's even like when you get like videos that get a lot of negative comments and it's got like 20,000 likes, and you're like, oh, right, because it's they've actually clicked like, even though they haven't messaged you. And so it's just remembering that, like, the impact you can have. And we're talking before, like, we can't track shares.
Right, right.
And so there's like, it's always got a bigger impact than you think. And it's kind of focusing on that impact.
Exactly. You know, someone saves that share and they post it on their Instagram, there's a whole new, you know, viewership audience that you can never even track. So you never know how far that video is actually stretching out to.
Exactly. But I mean, let's switch gears. I want to get more practical when it comes to content creation, because I know it's very easy to make the excuse, well, you know, TikTok's harder to grow on, YouTube's incredibly difficult to grow on, it's getting harder and harder. And that's all true, but people are still doing it. And so what practical tips would you give to anyone who's looking to be a creator, whether it's travel, whatever it is, what advice would you give them to like get started today? What platforms should they jump on? What equipment should they use? What mindset should they approach it with?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say that, you know, while TikTok has obviously blown up quite a bit, like we've been talking about in this podcast over the last 2 years, TikTok is one of the most unique yet beautiful platforms when it comes to their algorithm, because you can create a TikTok account and you can just randomly have a video that you filmed walking around a place and it can get a million views. And, you know, as you said, you woke up the next morning and you had, 30,000 followers the next day, and that can happen to anyone. And so that organic growth for, in some cases, not all cases on TikTok, you know, you might have a very simple video that's just sitting there in your, you know, in your photos folder right now that you can put up on TikTok and you can start it from right there, you know. But the reality is it's not a one size fits all, right? Like I know a lot of people who had to post hundreds of videos before they got their first one. And so it's important to remember that, you know, not everyone's journey is the same, and the only person you should ever be in competition with is yourself. And how can I make my last video or my next video better than my last video? And that's an important point in general, just jumping right in. So if I were to basically pick two platforms to focus on, and it all depends on your niche, let me just say most importantly. But, you know, as a traveler, like TikTok is what gave me the push. TikTok, there's just a lot of opportunities, and you can go down any path for niche and really have the opportunity to grow. And then YouTube is a really good long-term play, because the difference between TikTok and YouTube is just simply the fact, if you have long YouTube videos, you have more time with that person. Yeah. That subscriber is going to watch you for, you know, 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 minutes. They're getting that much more FaceTime. They're building that much stronger of a relationship with you. And it's also going to be a different type of viewer, right? Like, that's going to be longer attention span, whereas TikTok is, you know, fast-paced consuming.
I always say TikTok, it has to be a vehicle to push to, like, for me, it's the podcast. Right. Like, there's only so much value I can provide in 30 seconds to a minute, right? It's going to be a vehicle to push them to this, where they can listen to me for an hour. Because anyone who ever messages me, they don't say, hey, I watch your TikTok videos. They say, I found you on TikTok and I started listening to your podcast. It's like, they only get an impact when they listen to the full thing. So I think it's a really good way to approach TikTok, like make it a vehicle, because it's the best, it's the easiest place to grow and the fastest place to grow, but it's not long-term sustainable.
Right, right. And, you know, I think there's definitely many ways you can monetize TikTok. And I found quite a few ways in 2021 when I was focused more on that for monetization. But I totally agree. Using it as a vehicle, pushing the traffic over to YouTube and building up that subscriber base there, because, you know, those stronger relationships. And, you know, YouTube, of course, is a very good program, because, you know, for those of you that aren't familiar with YouTube, you know, advertisers pay the creators. They pay YouTube, and YouTube gets 50% and the creators get 50% of those ads that are playing before, during, and after. And there's just a lot more money that you can make through YouTube without even getting to the next level of, I need a sponsorship, or I need, you know, some sort of collaboration to get me the financial means.
And it's more reliable, because if you know you get X amount of views per video, you know how much money you get per video, whereas brand deals come and go. But also, like, to give clarity, what he's saying there is YouTube's good because advertisers post their ads on your video, whereas TikTok, IG Reels, Facebook, the ads are in between videos. I'm sure if you've ever been on social media, if you're scrolling through TikTok and an ad pops up, like, where does the money go to? because it's not attributed to a creator. And this is kind of the issue TikTok's been facing. You know, they haven't, there's no split. And Hank Green did a really good video. I'm not sure if you watched that on it. And so he just spoke about how, like, TikTok made it a pool. They had a pool of money, and we give this, called the Creator Fund, which we don't even get in Australia. I don't even know that. And basically, it's really broken because there's an X amount of dollars that gets divided across all creators. However, that means the more creators that join the platform, the less money there is to creators. And so he had this one line. He's like, basically, the more people who get on TikTok, the less money we make as creators.
Right.
And it's like, it's really broken. So I think they're trying to fix that and get on a more YouTube model.
Yeah.
The point is, you can't rely on TikTok to be like a revenue stream, or like, you really want to try to build something bigger, but use that as the vehicle to push.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is with TikTok is, since there's just not this mass amount of ads that are playing, they just don't have the money. Like, the money from the creator fund is going, you know, directly from, you know, TikTok's back pocket.
Mm.
A lot of people think that YouTube is actually paying the creators, but it's actually the advertisers that are funding all of it, and YouTube's getting their cut. And so, you know, there are ways that I do know a lot of people that have been able to monetize TikTok, but I totally think that the more you diversify yourself, then you're going to be less reliant. And, you know, even with YouTube and having consistent views, like, you know, my revenue streams will go up and down, you know, maybe around the holiday times of the year, you know, advertisers are paying more money because the ad space is more expensive. So you might have a spike, and then later in the year when advertisers, you know, don't have as large of budgets, you won't be making as much money. And so the more places you're diversifying your focus points of how can I make a monetizable business out of this, the better you're going to be when one of the, you know, revenue streams is maybe dipping down a bit.
I think I say the average millionaire has 7 different streams of income.
Exactly.
And that's really, like, you've really got to start. I think the best way as a creator is to build a business model around it. That's the best way, because then you're in full control, and you know, you can control it, and you're not relying on brand deals and whatnot, and it's like, it's built around you. But then just diversifying it as well. But then also, like, for anyone who's not, I mean, looking at getting creator, not getting overwhelmed by this conversation and not going, how do I monetize it, and just starting.
Right.
I'd love to have a little quick chat around perfectionism and how that cripples so many creators.
Yeah.
Actually, Dale, who's here with us, we did a great episode. He talks a lot about perfectionism. And he was like, he posted a song a day for like 100 days. And again, the benefits were not just the content that went out and the followers that came from it, but his voice got way better because he was singing every day. He got way better as a songwriter because he was forced to do this. And I think letting go of perfectionism is something you have to do as a creator. There's like that quote from Martin Scorsese, if your first draft doesn't make you feel physically ill, then you've done something wrong.
Right.
And so even him, one of the greatest filmmakers of all time, when he sees his first draft, he's like, this is shit. But you have to get it out there.
You
because
do.
Without the first draft, there's not a second draft or a third draft.
Exactly. And if you spend too much time making that one perfect, you're just going to hold yourself back. And I can basically echo Dale's story, which, because it took me like up until June of last year that I just hit 10,000 subscribers on YouTube. I just hit 10,000 subscribers on YouTube, and I was making videos for almost 3 years before that, you know, dipping in the corporate world and then going, you know, straight into things. And it was actually when I realized, and, you know, after speaking to good friend Luke over here, and we were basically talking about my strategy before, which was, you know, making things to do videos, making travel guides. And I found that, you know, we found after talking about it that I wasn't building relationships with people through my content. And so I did a complete pivot and started, I got rid of my huge camera. You know, everyone thinks you need to have this nice camera to get into content creation and all these, you know, like perfect steps that you need to take. But in reality, it's about the storyline. And I spent some time with Luke, who, you know, who's done the more raw style vlogging, you know, just focusing more on, let's just jump right into culture. Let's jump right into this country and experience it, rather than focusing on, you know, making this perfect cinematic video. And honestly, in the last 9-10 months, my YouTube life has completely changed. I'm almost at, you know, like 260,000 subscribers, and I was at 10,000 less than a year ago. And it's all about cutting out the perfectionism and doing something that you're even more passionate about. And also, I did a large volume, similar to Dale here, where I've put out almost 300 videos in a row as daily vlogs on YouTube. And it, exactly as what happened with Dale, made him a better singer, it made me a better vlogger. You know, like, probably a year ago, I might be a little nervous to be on this podcast, but because I've, you know, been doing so many daily vlogs, you just get so ingrained and you get so comfortable with doing what you like to do, which is, you know, sharing the world.
Yeah, and that's audience none, right? My point is, like, if you did all of those, what was it, 300 days, right, and you had no listeners, no one watched your videos, sure, that that sucks. You put in all this work, but like you're much better at communicating. You're much more confident. You're going to meet all these cool people. And the other thing about vlogging is it's like almost like because you're vlogging, you have to put yourself in scenarios because you need content. And so you have this more exciting stuff. Because I mean, Dale did a 3-month challenge to vlog, just do a weekly vlog while we're doing everything else. And we were like, what are we doing this weekend? We're like, we don't know, but we have to do something. So we just go out and we like drive places and do all cool stuff. So it kind of forces you. So again, it's going back to if there were no listeners, if there were no one watching, is it still worth it? And in that case, definitely.
Yeah, because you know, you're growing as a person, and you know, it goes back to like the first thing we said in this conversation, which was, you know, you need to try out various things in life to see what you like, see what you don't like. And regardless of whatever the outcome is, you're going to learn so many things from those experiences that you've had that it is always going to be worth it to go down that route, to really push yourself outside of your comfort zone and just take the leap of faith.
It's like when going back to the perfectionism thing, you're kind of saying there's like this graph. It's called the J curve or something. There's a graph, and it's basically starts off very small, and there's very, very, very little movement, and then eventually it goes, and it's kind of a graph on momentum. And I say most people give up before they can hit the momentum, and because once you hit the momentum, it just goes off. Like once you get the followers, more come in, it just gets easier and easier. You get more money coming in, you can outsource, blah blah blah. But many people give up before they hit that curve. And it's basically like the top people at the top of this curve make 90% of the money for 10% of the work. When everyone else here is down here. But you've got to put in that 90% of the work for 10% results in order to grow. Point is, like, you've got to work really, really hard to hit the momentum. But most people give up after momentum. And the issue is we're always comparing ourselves to the people who have already got there. The iceberg thing, right? You only see the tip of the iceberg when underneath there's like all this work. Which is like you, 3 years to get 10,000 followers. Subscribers, sorry. And then, you know, a year to go from 10,000 to 250. And now you probably hit a million in, you know, the next year or two. You know, who knows?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
The point is, once you hit that momentum, many people give up before they hit momentum. And because of the reasons we've mentioned in this podcast, they're not passionate about it. They're doing it for the wrong reasons. External versus internal validation, audience and none, all that sort of stuff.
Exactly, yeah. And I think, like, the thing people need to realize is that you are always going to have people surrounding you that have a different speed on how that J curve works for them.
Yes.
You know, like we have, you know, a couple of our friends, Luke and I's friends, you know, they have joined, they found, you know, some mentors to work with us on things, and we brought them with us, and they were able to have a different journey than let's say I had. You know, it took 3 years for the first 10,000 subscribers, and I know some people that have done it in a very fast period of time. And so it just goes back to the important point that, you know, I struggled with this when I first had quit my corporate job. There was another vlogger couple that I knew that, you know, I remember following them closely, and they blew up way faster, and I was always kind of comparing myself to them, thinking, wow, why isn't it working for me? But the thing is, you know, it, for me, it's never a competition. But now in hindsight, I look back and I've passed them. And I just want to mention this point, because the only competition you should ever have is with yourself.
Yeah.
And if you keep focusing, you never know how big your J curve's going to be, right? Yeah. You never know. You have a different audience. You have a different life story. You have a different focus on why you're creating this content.
But it's in the journey where you develop.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it's in a struggle with the first, like, year where aren't getting any views. But that's what builds your brand. It builds your resilience, and also you become really good. So when you actually get views, you've got good content.
Exactly.
I wouldn't want to go viral straight away, because your content's probably crap and it'll be embarrassing. You
know what
I
mean? Right.
Because you can build the hard yards, and also your expectations go through the roof.
Right.
If you go viral instantly and then suddenly you're not going viral on other videos, it messes with you.
But
if you can really connect with what you're doing and build the hard yards, if you're not getting the views, it shouldn't affect you.
Right. And it's such a good point that you mentioned there, is if you do go viral right away, you have these unrealistic expectations that every video is going to take off like that. And it can really, I know people that it causes them a lot of stress just because, you know, they had these high expectations. And, you know, for years I would only get a couple hundred views the first few hours, first few days when I would post a YouTube video. And, you know, some of the countries I've went to in the last few months, you know, there's videos that get a couple hundred thousand views, and then, you know, I'll have a video that gets 20,000. And since I remember the journey of only getting a couple hundred views for so many years, I still appreciate, wow, 20,000 people, you know, took the time to watch my video. And I don't have as much of like a disappointment if my views drop, you know, marginally. And it really helps to remember that, you know, not all videos are going to perform the same, but the passion and the belief and doing something you love will always get you through those moments, get you through the J curve, and get you to that point of success.
I was even saying that to Luke today. I was just like, for my other account, Byron and Pace, like, we get really big views on that account. And we had a video, in my opinion, it flopped. 150,000 views is not a good It was just crazy that this is the point I'm at. Yeah. I was like, 20,000 people liked that video, and I'm like disassociated with the fact that it's like, that's crazy. Like, I would have killed for that 2 years ago.
Right. You could fill up a stadium with that many people.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
I know. It's insane. And it's like, it's crazy how used to stuff.
Yeah.
Know? It's a hedonic treadmill, they call it. It's where you like get used to stuff really quickly. Like, you get a new car and you love it for a week, then you get used to it. You're in a relationship.
Right.
And it's fun and incredible. And then after, you know, a week, or not a week, but after a week.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, after the honeymoon period or the 3 months, 6 months, it kind of fizzles out a little bit in some cases.
Right.
And that's, you know, scientific term for that, but it applies to content as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, us as humans, we're just programmed to think, all right, I need to reach this goal. And honestly, the second you reach that goal, you're already reaching for the next one.
Yeah, you go for the next one. So if you're constantly reaching, this is like the whole thing I said about living in the moment. How you live your days is how you live your life. You
right.
know, not focusing on when I get this, when I get this, when I get that. Because that's dangerous. Because you go, when I get 100,000 subscribers, when I get 250, and it's like, no, just enjoy the journey.
Exactly.
Just focus on living in now.
Yeah, because one day you're going to look back and you're going to be like, wow, the journey was like some of the most...
Yes, exactly.
Like life-building and craziest moments of my life. And I love sharing the hardest moments of my life because... In hindsight, we learn so much from all of these things, even though in the moment they're so freaking tough to get through. But like, they're all part of the journey that are going to shape you into a much better and more developed person.
Mm.
And you know, when you're going through those tough times, just remember, you know, everything in life to a certain extent is temporary, right? Like, the you know, the good days and the bad days. You need the bad days to appreciate the good days.
Exactly.
And you need the good days to remember that, you know, not all days, you know, are going to be perfect.
Yeah, 100%. Have you seen The Office?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know that quote? It's like, I think it could be the final episode with like Andy, and he's just like, I wish there was a way to know the good old days when you're in the good old days. Like,
right.
It's always in hindsight. Oh, they were the good old days.
Yeah.
It's like, the answer is, it's now.
It's now.
You're in the good old days. You're always in the good old days. You're always going to look back on these times, whether you have money or not.
Right.
Right. If anything, most people refer to the good old days when you didn't have money, because it's like we were
exactly.
just living in a crappy house, doing whatever.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that's the good old days. So learning to appreciate the now, that's how you achieve the big goals you want to do.
Because
a goal is just a habit compounded over time.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
But yeah. Man, thanks so much for coming on the show. Before we wrap up, I got one final question I ask every guest.
Yes.
It's a big one. And what would your number one piece of advice be to an 18-year-old today?
My number one piece of advice today would be, start off, first of all, take a deep breath and realize it is okay to not know exactly what you want to do for the rest of your life.
Mm.
You know, at 18 years old, I was very far away from figuring out what I wanted to do. But if you can take that time, find some things that interest you. Try them out. Push yourself a little bit further outside of your comfort zone. And it's totally okay if you take a decision and you decide it's not for you. One thing that a previous guy in leadership that I worked for at my last company had said, he said, don't worry if you make the wrong decision. All you have to do is make another decision out of that. And you will be able to look back and learn so much from trying out that new experience or going on that adventure or getting out and traveling the world and experiencing a culture that you might have these beliefs on. So getting out there and trying something new will be the first step into developing you into your best self.
I love it, man. And there's that quote, the hero and the coward have the same fear, but the hero does it anyway. How often do we look at people who are doing something that we don't think we can do because they're different. Oh, there's something about them. It's like, no, you can do that.
Absolutely.
It's like everyone has the same fears. You went through the same problems that everyone else would have gone through, but you just pushed through.
Right.
It's like, don't look at them and go, oh, well, he had this happen. Even though it's true, that mindset's not going to help you. Because
right.
like, especially anyone listening to this podcast, you have access to the internet. You have access to so many things. You can do so much with your life. And it's such an exciting time to be alive. There's that other thing. It was like, when the internet was born, our generation was given an escalator. But most people are still taking the stairs.
Right,
and that's
right.
true. Most people are still taking the traditional pathways that like we've been able to do for 50, 60 years. They're not leveraging this incredible asset that's the internet.
Right.
It blows my mind. It genuinely blows my mind. Like, we have this opportunity in front of us to just like kind of create the life that we want. Our parents never had this opportunity.
Right.
Like, they didn't have the internet. They had to go to textbooks to find everything. They couldn't travel
mm-hmm.
and vlog and create content. They couldn't start a podcast. They couldn't
right.
do what we're doing now. So take advantage of the times that we're in.
Absolutely. You know, it's a new world, to be honest, in the last couple of years. It's a new world in the last couple of years. And one more time.
You're good.
Dirty parties have got me. It's, you know, it's this world is still very new to our generation, right? Exactly as you said, that, you know, our parents didn't have the internet growing up. We do. And a lot of us are still realizing that you can do anything you want. It's at your fingertips.
Yeah.
It's just taking that leap and getting comfortable with it, trying it out and giving it your best shot.
100%. Well, Mac, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an awesome episode. If anyone wants to get in contact with you, follow you online, what's the best place to go?
Instagram's the best. You know, feel free if you ever have any questions about travel, send me a message. It's at WorldNoMac. So my name's Mac, M-A-C. But WorldNoMac, it's like nomad, yeah. But a little punny there if
it's
you guys get
one.
It.
It's a great name.
Yeah, thank you. Cheers.
It's a really good one. But yeah, guys, if you made it this far, message Mac. Like, just send a message. What do you get out of this podcast? Message me as well. I always love receiving them. So otherwise, Mac, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Byron, it's been amazing, man. Such a good time. Thank you so much for having me.